Welcome to Parents Perspective. I can't do it, wailed 6-year-old Sarah, throwing her pencil across the room. What can't you do? Her dad came over and pulled up a chair next to Sarah's homework table. It's this story I'm supposed to write about our class trip to the zoo, she moaned. And I can't spell the names of any of the animals. The letters just get wobbly when I try to write them down.
Well, let's see here, her dad squinted down at her paper. You just need a B for baboon, he began.
I thought that was a B, she whimpered. See, I'm so dumb I can't even tell the difference.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about dyslexia in children, and what can we do to help? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest can help us all better understand the problems of dyslexia. Dr. Guinevere Eden is currently director of the Center for the Study of Learning at Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C. The center's research focuses on the neurobiological representation of reading and how it might be altered in individuals who are deaf or have dyslexia. The investigators are studying how reading disability is affected by instructions or the mode of communication. Dr. Eden is the proud aunt of 2 nieces. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Eden.
Thank you for having me.
First, we need you to explain what dyslexia is.
Well, dyslexia or developmental dyslexia is a situation where children unexpectedly have trouble with learning to read. And unexpectedly meaning that they seem to be doing really quite well in other areas academically and in their lives in general, and then as they begin to be taught explicitly how to read, it seems that they are struggling with being able to acquire those skills. And so these are children who typically have difficulty that they labor over sounding out a particular word. They read more slowly than other children, and it's just an enormous effort for them to get to the end of the word, and they can barely get to the end of a sentence.
We often hear that children with dyslexia, like the one in the story, see things differently. Can you tell us why that would be?
Well, I think it's important to remember that when people talk about dyslexia, they're really talking about difficulties in reading words. And the question is, what is the cause of that? And there are many areas of research that are ongoing that are trying to understand what is the reason why these children have such a hard time acquiring reading skills. And looking at the role of the visual system has been one of the areas that's been under active investigation. Interestingly, the first reports of dyslexia, which are now just over 100 years old, were made by people whose main interest was the visual system, ophthalmologists in Britain and in this country, who noticed that children seemed to have what was sometimes called a word blindness, just an ability to recognize letters and make up words. I think now the research can best be characterized by saying that it's clear that children with dyslexia have a number of difficulties, not just their reading, but also their spelling, as you mentioned in your story. And there seem to be associated difficulties, and they're not always exactly the same for one dyslexic as the next child with dyslexia. They're not all alike, and some children will tell you more about some of the visual confusion that they're experiencing. And the question really still is, how much of that is dyslexia and how much of that is something that is part of dyslexia? And the reason that is important is because when you're thinking about treatment, you want to know which of the difficulties that children with dyslexia report do you address to help them to become better readers. And the research really is still ongoing to try and help us make that decision. How much can you help children by addressing issues that involve the visual system as opposed to by addressing issues that help children understand the representation between the sounds that they hear and the letters that they see on the page?
I was going to ask that question because it seems to me in what you're doing in your lab, you're working with people who don't hear sounds.
Mm-hmm. And spelling is dependent so much on sounds, and phonics, the way reading is taught so much, is dependent on sounds. So what's the auditory connection?
One of the questions that our lab and other labs in this country and elsewhere are trying to understand is, how does reading really work in the brain? What is it that makes us become a good reader? Mm-hmm. And it's only when we understand more about normal reading can we understand questions about not reading that doesn't seem to be developed typically. And if you think about reading, what makes reading special is that we have to learn to associate the sounds of our language with a visual symbolic representation on the text. And when we learn to speak, we do that seemingly quite naturally and easily. And people have said if you raise a child on a desert island, they would develop some sort of language. They would probably speak something and communicate in that way. But what we have done with reading is to map our spoken language, which is over hundreds and hundreds of years old, onto a visual representation. And that idea of doing that is only about 4,000 or 6,000 years old. So it's really something that we have come to very recently. And when I say that, I'm comparing it to other functions that people, scientists, have studied in the brain that we know have been there for much, much longer than that. It's actually the mechanisms by which, through evolution, our brains have become very specialized to make us function well in our environment. And something like reading has only been around for maybe 4,000 years, only really been practiced by more and more people in the last 100 years. And so there's nothing in the brain that is born to make us a reader. We really, I think, need to think of reading as a process that our society has brought along, and we are under tremendous pressure to become good readers, because if you cannot read, you cannot access all the information that we need to make us successful, not just academically, but also socially. And so we've put our brain in a slightly awkward situation here, that we're saying, this is what you need to learn to do. Here's the language, and here's how we need to map it onto print. And it's our ability to learn in a way so that we can do it fluently enough so that we can read rapidly off a page, which is difficult for some kids with dyslexia. And so a lot of research is going on in terms of trying to understand what exactly is the nature of the relationship between mapping sound to print, and what are the skills that are predictive of that, which is important to identifying children early on before they even begin to try to learn to read, so that we can see who may be at risk at developing a reading problem when they come to that stage in their early education. And also understanding what are the mechanisms by which we can teach kids those skills that then eventually make them better readers, or to teach those kids who clearly are a struggling reader. And so the reason we do some research also in individuals who are deaf is to understand how does our early sensory experience change the ability of the brain to deal with written print. And because we do studies that involve brain imaging, this is one mechanism by which we can look at these situations. And it's really an example of how interdisciplinary the research is going into reading, where we link up with experts in deaf education and in people who do brain imaging and in people who do early identification of children at risk for reading problems, and to study which treatment approaches are effective in children who have reading problems.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on dyslexia.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Guinevere Eden about dyslexia in children.
What's the difference between what's going on in the brain of a, quote, normal child who's learning to read, and what's going on in the brain of a dyslexic child?
Well, what's interesting is that if you compare groups of people with and without dyslexia, whether they're children or adults, there are some key areas in the brain that don't seem to be active in people who have dyslexia when you compare them to people who do not have dyslexia. I won't bore you with the anatomical labels of those. They sound like non-words in themselves and make us all feel a little dyslexic from time to time. But they are areas that we've known for a long time that seem to be involved in the mapping of print to language. In fact, one of the areas has been known for over 100 years now to probably be important in reading, because when patients who have a stroke in that part of the brain, they may lose their ability to read, although they once were perfectly good readers. And then what the interesting thing about brain imaging is that in addition to these types of areas that we have known to be involved in language, we discover new areas, because studying a brain intact, so to speak, in children who are developing their reading skills, and when you compare those to kids who are trying to develop their reading skills but are struggling, we see additional areas. And it seems that there's a whole network of regions that are affected, and people have been studying those using these non-invasive imaging technologies. So you can see, you don't see it live as you're looking at the child in the brain scanner, so to speak, but after doing the analyses across, where you pool across kids who are in the studies, you can see differences between dyslexics and non-dyslexics. What's interesting is you can also see differences when they are doing a task that's not directly related to reading. We've been looking at the visual system in people with dyslexia and also find differences there. And what's interesting about those results is that we're not quite sure yet how those relate back to the reading process, whether these visual areas really are crucial to the reading process, or in fact, whether we're looking at areas in the brains of people with dyslexia that may be affected as a result of their dyslexia. It may not be the contributing factor to their reading problem, but it's almost an epiphenomena of their dyslexia.
What would be an example?
So there's an area in the brain that through the sort of fine-tuning of the brain become the major area that we use for detecting where things are moving in space, particularly around us in our periphery. And it's this area that has been investigated in behavioral studies of dyslexia, suggesting that a certain aspect of the visual system may be different in people with dyslexia. And using brain imaging, we and others have shown that indeed that is the case. You do see differences, but you don't see it when they're doing a reading task necessarily. You see it when they're being asked to track information that is moving in their visual scene. Mm-hmm. And so what we and others are now trying to do is trying to relate this back to the reading process, you know, in the context that we don't really know, other than the language areas, what else our brain uses to become a reader. And maybe it did borrow areas from the visual system. We just don't really know yet. And even what's interesting about these other areas is that you can study them in people who are good and poor readers. You do not have to have the person actually read text to study these areas, which means maybe we can use it as a way to look at younger individuals before they even acquire reading skills, to see when I take a young child who may be at risk for dyslexia because it runs in their family, for example, can we use these kinds of tests to see whether there are differences in their brains that seem to be maybe an indication that they have dyslexia, so to make a contribution to early identification.
What about parents who are wondering, looking at their 3-year-old or their 5-year-old, gee, I wonder if Johnny does have dyslexia, what kinds of things should they be watching for?
Well, parents who have children where they have concerns that they may have reading problems can do a number of things to look for signs. Parents who know that where there is dyslexia in the family should be particularly aware of these things. We know that it is heritable. It's not untypical that when we see children and we talk to the parents about their children's reading problems, that they will say, well, you know, that's what I had when I was little, but no one ever told me it was dyslexia. I just thought I was stupid, or I just thought I was different, and no one helped me to understand that this had something to do with dyslexia. So the first step is knowing that your child may be at risk, because maybe someone else in the family, and it may not be the parents, it may be an aunt or an uncle, is known to have had a reading problem, or maybe there are cousins in the family. And then you really want to do the types of things that we know are indicative of how good kids are going to be at understanding the structure, the sound structure of language, because that then allows them to map that onto print, which is what they're going to have to learn when they begin to learn to read. And so what many of us say to parents is just do the kinds of games with words that could be fun for your child, just to let them understand that there are sounds within words that rhyme and that sounds can be broken up. And so the kinds of games that you might do just in the car on the way to school with your child are rhyming games. You know, you say a word and your child comes up with a word that rhymes with that. And this has a direct relationship to research, where people have known now for almost 20 years that when you take children who are in kindergarten and you ask them to do games like hat, cat, dog, mat, which is the odd one out, the children who can tell that there's a word in there that doesn't rhyme and tell you which one it is are the ones who are likely to go on to school and do well at reading, and the ones who have difficulties with that task a few years down the road struggle with their reading. And the researchers have also shown that if you very explicitly teach children an understanding of rhymes and the relationship between words, that they then do somewhat better when they are given more help in understanding those concepts. Mm. When children are a little older, you can start deleting sounds and words. If I say to you, what is Germany without the M word, what is the answer?
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that interesting?
That's something that you can do as an experienced reader. The answer would be Germany. Mm-hmm. A young child would probably not be able to do that, but they could probably say, what is the first sound in bat? Or what is bat without the first sound?
But it's interesting for readers. Linda was probably doing the same thing I was with that particular task. We were visualizing the word and taking the letter out and mm-hmm. then using phonetics to go through the sounds. Mm-hmm. So the auditory and the visual seem to work so closely together.
And we're very visual. We see things.
And part of that is because you are experienced readers, and mm-hmm. and so that allows you to visualize things inside your head. And sometimes that is also a way to teach kids to become better at reading, allowing them to visualize words in their heads. But for a beginning reader, you don't have that experience yet. In fact, the kind of skill that I'm talking about, which is often referred to as phonological awareness, is something that seems to be predictive of reading. So if you come to that more naturally, you're likely to do well with reading. But the more you read and the greater your reading experience is, the better your phonological awareness skills become.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on dyslexia.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Guinevere Eden about dyslexia.
So what you really want to do is get a sense of your child's ability at these kinds of skills. How good are they at rhyming? How good are they at deleting? In young children, you can only sort of delete beginning sounds and end mm-hmm. sounds, not really the middle sounds. When you're a little older, you can do things like Pig Latin, mm-hmm. where you delete the end sound and then you add another sound to that. And so you're doing more manipulation and involving more memory. And those are the things that you can look out for and that you can play games with your child. If you feel that your child is really struggling with those sorts of things, you might want to bring it to the attention of a professional.
What kind of a professional should you turn to?
Well, this is where it gets very difficult, I think, for parents, because there are a range of professionals who can help in this way. And unfortunately, who you go to may be more determined by who you know or what you've just recently read. And I think depending on the stage of where your child is, if your child is in school, the school is the first place where you want to go and talk to, particularly to the reading teacher, about any concerns that you may have that your child is a struggling reader. And what the teacher can do is focus on the different aspects of reading. Because remember, reading is quite complicated. There's reading comprehension, there's reading accuracy, there's reading speed. They are all related to one another. But if your child turns out to be fairly accurate at decoding print, but does so very slowly, your teacher may propose a different approach to if it's the other way around, that in fact your child is really having tremendous problems even sounding out the words, which is what is the most typically seen in dyslexics. And so that's really the first thing that you want to do. I think beyond that, there are other professionals that you can contact. You can have an evaluation with a neuropsychologist. You might want to see a speech pathologist if you have concerns that there are other issues in terms of language, particularly what's called expressive and receptive language.
Now, my question is, I know there are special kinds of optometrists that teach exercises and things for mm-hmm. children, if that is indeed a diagnosis. How readily is that used?
I think you have to remember that by definition, dyslexia is a reading problem. And so the intervention is one that where you want to show that whatever the intervention does, it improves reading abilities. And this is where we have somewhat of a problem, I think, still, in that we don't have enough research that tells us what kind of interventions are helpful for these children and adults with reading problems. what you really need to be able to answer that question, and we get this question a lot, and that is, you know, my child has these and these problems. I'm thinking about this and this intervention. What do you know about it? And often, unfortunately, we have to say, you know, we don't know enough about it. And there's a lot of research going on so that people know the answer to those questions soon, but really not enough, maybe not enough to answer your child's particular question. And what I mean by the kind of research is we need studies that show that if you look at a particular intervention and you compare it to maybe another kind of intervention or to a group of children that do not receive the intervention, that you see significant gains in those kids who receive the intervention, and that those gains directly affect their reading skills, because that's, after all, what we're interested in, dyslexia. And that may seem like a very obvious thing to do, but there really isn't enough of that kind of research that we can refer to at this moment. There's a lot of research that currently is going on because people have realized that we need more research like this. And what people are pushing for now very hard, I think, is to try and make reading and reading disability follow the model that's been followed in medicine for clinical trials. When you and I go and buy a particular pill to help us with whatever we have, whether it's headache or whatever, we know that that has gone through an approval process where people have very carefully scrutinized the results and the evidence to suggest that A, this drug helps, and B, that it doesn't have side effects that are worse than the actual problem in the first place. And in reading intervention, we don't have that sort of information. What we do have, and this is the thing that's so problematic for parents, is that if you go on the internet to look for what programs may help your child to become a better reader, there are many programs that claim that your child will become a better reader. And then you look at, well, what is the evidence? Often you'll find it's anecdotal evidence. Mrs. Someone rather may have said, you know, my child is doing so much better. And the problem we have there is we don't know if that is just one success story. And we don't even know how that parent evaluated that particular success in their child. What we need are studies where children have been really randomized into a particular intervention, reading intervention A versus reading intervention B, and compared to children who did not receive the intervention who also have reading problems. So a group of dyslexics that did not receive the intervention and then are compared to the ones who did. And the reason we need to do that is because it allows us to see how effective any of these interventions are, and also if the effect is because of the intervention or something called the placebo effect, which is a very strong effect. And my concern here is that parents may find a program that sounds really promising on the internet. They go and buy it. They spend, in some cases, thousands of dollars. And then, of course, it's hard not to be convinced that this program is helping your child, when, in fact, the research, which is done in a much more objective way, may not have provided that kind of evidence. And what we need to do is provide the information to a parent ahead of time. So I think the answer to your question is there's a lot of research going on right now to be able to answer those questions. And as a parent, at this point, you still have to really educate yourself. You have to become an advocate for your child, and you have to ask critical questions about the program that's being used in the clinic that you may be going to, or even in the school. I think it's, as a parent, you're in your rights to say to the school, well, tell me why you think my child should be going through this particular reading program as opposed to any other one. Is there some research evidence to suggest that children of the same age as my child do better after they've completed this course of the maybe year or 6 weeks of this program? Why are we using this particular program?
And if there isn't evidence, then you move along to another?
Well, again, like anything, if it's in the clinic situation, you want to get the advice, and I think clinics are very good at offering the advice of why they use certain programs. They may have some experience of their own with it, but of course it does help if they can show you that there's evidence in what is referred to as the peer review published literature, and that is where scientists have submitted their results and say these are done under rigorous scientific conditions. They are objective. They are not influenced by maybe the commercial interest of a company, which is, of course, the other issue that you have to deal here with, is that any company, of course, is going to tell you that their product is fantastic because they have a conflict, and that is they need
business.
To keep the, yes, they need to stay in business. And so I think as a parent right now, you do have to become somewhat educated, and I think what helps is to speak to other parents who have experience with programs, but also in addition, ask the hard questions. Is there scientific evidence for this?
We would love to speak more about this subject, but unfortunately our time is up, and we do want to leave our parents with some ideas of resources that they can glom onto at this point.
The best resource, I think, for any parent who is concerned that their child may have reading problems or is at risk for reading problems because dyslexia may be in the family, is the International Dyslexia Association, who, and they are in Baltimore, and you can access them by their website, which is www.interdys.org, interdys.org, and their telephone number is 410-296-0232. And they will provide information that is really tailored to anyone who may be interested in dyslexia, whether you're a parent or a teacher or a child with dyslexia, to let you know more about what dyslexia is and what you can do to help anybody who has difficulties in acquiring reading skills.
Now, they could be helpful, I assume, in helping you evaluate interventions that are worth your investigating and those that are not.
What they will do is they will help you refer you to people in your area where you live who do reading evaluations. Mm-hmm. Because before you even go down the path of looking into what reading interventions may help, you really want to know what your child's weaknesses and strengths are, so that then the next question about the intervention is a more informed one. And again, the professionals will help in making that decision.
And I would think also, to do a complete job, a parent would want to talk to the pediatrician involved also, just to be sure that there's not a vision problem or a hearing problem or something else that's really getting in the way.
That's an important point, and that is that dyslexia really is at the focus of a number of different disciplines, and you want to make sure, not only you mentioned that there could be something else that could explain the reading problem, you want to rule those out exactly. You want to rule out that there is a gross visual motor deficit. You also may want to look at it in the context of other issues. One of the things about dyslexia is that it does often co-occur with attention deficit disorder, and a child who is not reading may either not be reading because they have difficulties in learning to read or because they have difficulties in learning to attend. And so mm-hmm. It's important that all of these aspects be looked at with the professional that you choose, who could be your pediatrician. But I think what you really want is a sort of a combination of a team between a physician and a neuropsychologist in this case, because both of them offer valuable advice that can help you reach the diagnosis more rapidly than if you do any of these independently.
Well, you have offered all of us valuable advice. Dr. Guinevere Eden, thank you so much for being with us today and helping us learn a lot more about dyslexia.
You're quite welcome.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 200. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Hospital for Sick Children in Washington, D.C. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.